One of the nice things about working in theatre is that it's totally possible to meet with or even work with people who inspired you early on in your career, or maybe even before it started. My guest today is someone who I was totally aware of whilst I was still training to be an actor, and yet several years later, I direct probably my favourite job to date, actually. It's Julie Atherton. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really good.
Good. Now, I made it sound like there's quite a big age gap between us. Like, when I was at drama school, you were like...
Yeah.
But, actually, there's only, like, a few years difference between us, really, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think it's like...
I mean, you're a lot older than me, but...
No, but genuinely...
Because I've gone backwards now.
But I think you've regressed.
Yeah.
But I think that there's... You must have just got on it really early. Because I was still in drama school when you were doing... I mean, Avenue Q is really what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
So you must have been quite young when you did that.
Yeah, I mean, I did the usual, went to college till I was 18, is it? When you go to college?
I think 21.
No, and then I went to...
Oh, college,
and then
yeah.
And then I went to Mount View. Yeah, went to Mount View when I was 18 till 21. And then... But I got a job straight away when I came out.
And was that Avenue Q? Was that your first job?
No. It was Mamma Mia.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then just kind of went from there. So, yeah, I think I was...
But you must have been fairly young when you did Avenue Q. You must have been.
I guess. It's probably about... I can't even remember. When was it? What year was it? Actually, let's not work it out, because then they'll work it out.
Yeah. And was that... I mean, is it fair to say... I mean, it was... Obviously, it was sort of quite early on in your career, but... It was quite a bit of a game changer for you, wasn't it, Avenue Q?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like that really...
Yeah, it was the first original cast in the West End, definitely. So, yeah, I loved it. It was such a good show.
Mm. And so what was it like so early on in your career to do something that kind of had a lot of expectation around it? Because I think the show had existed on Broadway before it came here.
Yeah.
And it had such a lot of buzz around it. People knew, you know, people had followed it from America over here, and there was a lot of expectation about it coming here. So what was it like being involved with something like that so early on?
It was just so busy. We had a lot of marketing to do, basically. And so we'd go to lots of events, and which sounds really exciting, going to events and then doing all these little bits on TV, doing loads of little concerts and gigs and, you know, little things here and there, which sounds exciting if you were going as a human, but we were going as characters, as puppets. So you had to constantly improvise with puppeteering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy when you set the show. Well, not, it's never easy, but once you've set the show, you know exactly what's coming, you know what you're doing, you know what facial expression you're going to do, you know what your other person's facial expression is going to be, because you cannot look at their face. You have to look at the puppet.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be looking the other way, you know, it's
so doing that kind of stuff on the fly is really difficult.
And when somebody asks you, you're like, we need to get the questions beforehand,
right?
Because we need, you know, and it just became just work all the time, because we were still learning to puppeteer. Like, now I'm so much easier with it. Because you get the hang of it after a while.
Yeah. But aside from it being difficult in that respect, what was it like as an actress to be... Because obviously, you know, we all get into this business, really, let's be honest. We all get into it to be successful and for people to look at us and take, you know. So for you to be doing something so early on that was so widely recognised, and it was such a big hit, it was a massive hit, it was everywhere, which is... as I say, why I was totally aware of who you were before we met. What was that like?
It's quite bizarre, actually. Like, especially when, like, even now, if somebody stops me and goes, "Are you Julie Atherton?" I always think, that's so, why? How do you know that?
But there must be a part of you that doesn't mind that, because, you know, you don't...
Oh, no, of course I don't mind, but I don't get it either. Like, it for me, I think it's probably a northern thing. You just learn to ignore compliments or just never take them. It took me a long time to take compliments. I didn't realise I was probably being rude, going, "Oh, no, I'm not," or something. Like, "You look nice." I don't. Just say thank you.
Yeah, just take the compliment.
I still inside go, oh, don't say things. You know, I've just got that northern in me that.
So like, that was it.
Be a big head. You know?
And so, stay grounded.
Yeah, and so I've got that in me, and I find it hard when people big you up or say nice things because I always just think, oh, please don't think I'm an absolute.
So that was one of the major hurdles for you doing the show, was that you were in the spotlight, essentially. People were, not just in terms of being on stage, but people were making a fuss about it. So was that one of the biggest things that you had to overcome doing that show?
Yeah, I guess.
People were taking notice of you.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and it's very flattering. It's very nice. Mm. Don't get me wrong. Of course it is. It's lovely.
I don't think you're on your own there, though. I think a lot of people, I was talking with someone else who's doing this podcast series, Lara, and we were talking about how it's so strange that people who don't really want the attention tend to gravitate towards the spotlight. It's quite a weird thing. It's quite a weird dynamic, isn't
it? For me, I just really enjoyed being somebody else.
That's exactly what Laura said.
And I find it hard to be myself, but I've conquered that because it was a massive fear, like doing a gig and having to talk as myself. Mm. Even interviews, I get a bit like, this is nice, but I get a bit clammed up normally. But I conquered that by doing loads and loads of gigs and making sure that, you know, I was...
You could be Julie.
Yeah, but I was literally opening my soul about stuff as well. So I was just... But yeah. It's hard. I kind of learned how to be Julie on stage.
Uh-huh.
Because if it was just really me on stage, it's that I'd be just...
It's so funny. I could hear what you're about to say before you say it, just from what your eyes are doing. Yeah, that's true. The real you on stage might be a bit much. So you mentioned a little bit before about that you're northern. So whereabouts were you born?
Preston.
Oh, Preston, Lancashire, yeah. Oh, know it well.
Glamorous.
And talk a little bit about your kind of upbringing. So what do your parents do?
My mum's a nurse.
Okay.
She's actually just about to retire this year.
Oh, right. Oh, nice.
At the age of 78. Like, you'd think she'd have retired before that, wouldn't you?
Your mum's 78?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So no kind of like showbiz background, nothing
no.
there.
No.
So how do you find it? What drew you, you know, Preston, Lancashire, your mum's a nurse. How the hell did you get to the West End?
I mean, my mum did Amdram. Mm-hmm. So she absolutely loved the theatre, and she used to take me to the theatre to see the Preston Musical Comedy Society shows. And they churn out a musical every year, and I just love it. Mm-hmm. And you go and see the pantos as well. And I remember going to see Blood Brothers, which was a touring company, and I just thought, wow, okay, that's pretty good.
Well, it was like the next rung up the ladder, something really professional.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And... we always used to listen to theatre and all sorts of music. Like, I was brought up on country music, and I just remember there's a CD as well, and I used to call it, it's called The Chopin I Love. It was Chopin. I had no idea, and for years I was going, you know, Chopin. But anyway, yeah, we listened to all sorts of music together, and I was pretty mute till the age of 11. I just didn't speak to anyone. My dad died in a horrific accident when I was 3. And so my whole family were kind of grieving when I was growing up. So I always felt a bit detached at school anyway, because no one was going through something like that,
yes.
I guess. Which, do you know what? They probably were.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was quite kind of mute. Obviously, I wasn't at home, but I was at school. Mm-hmm. Didn't really speak until I went to high school, and I just suddenly decided, right, I'm not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to not speak. Mm. And then I was just very naughty.
So you're making up for lost time.
Yeah, I was a bit of a rebel. I'm a rule breaker. Still am.
Yes, so, I know and love that about you, actually. Yeah. That's why I think we're friends.
Yeah.
So you went... I just want to touch upon something you said, actually, because I find that really interesting. And it's something that's come up pretty much with everyone that I've spoken to so far, which is this idea that you are kind of from a smaller place, smaller town, but it was touring shows that kind of it was the bug. That's what kind of, you know, appealed to you. And it was those kind of travelling shows, and it's actors who leave London, they go. And it's just kind of brought home to me since doing this series how vital touring productions are.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many times, like I remember doing Sister Act on tour, and, mm-hmm. you know, we made friends with so many of the, like, fangirls at stage door, mm-hmm. like not fangirls in a weird sense. I mean, just like really cool girls about 14 that were like, oh my God, I absolutely love this. This is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And we're like, no, absolutely go and do it. And then you hear stories, you know, I still keep in touch with some of them. They're like, yeah, now I'm going to drama school and it's really cool. And
something that's really nice about you actually is, excuse me, I teach a lot, and I know that you've started working with students as well yourself recently. But what's really, really lovely is that there are kind of those songs that you hear a lot and in a nice way. And one song that I hear over and over and over again is Wait a Bit.
I knew you were going to say that one.
People love that song. You know, young girls, they absolutely love the song. And of course, it's synonymous with your performance, with your recording. Is that right? You did the album or did you do the show as well?
I did the show as well. And I did the show with Junix and Ocean, who has actually died recently. He was like the engineer in Miss Saigon, and he was absolutely amazing. But he was the eldest magician.
Okay.
And I recorded it with him in the studio, and then their CD came through the post, and I was like, oh, it's here. Oh, I'm singing with John Barrowman. Never met him, but.
Oh, really? They redubbed it?
Yeah, I'd never met him. But they brought him in, obviously, to.
Yeah, you know, for publicity and sales and stuff.
Yeah.
But that it's always so lovely, the amount of people. And of course, you know, no one knows that I know you when I'm going out to Cardiff or wherever I'm teaching, and people say, oh, I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to do Wait a Bit from Just So. And, you know, why did you pick this song? Well, I really just love Judy Atherton's performance in it. And it's just so nice. A little part of me inside is just thinking, I know her. Slightly fangirling myself.
I know everything about her.
I know too much about her. So you, we've talked a bit about this kind of idea of, you know, seeing these local amateur shows, pantos, touring productions. So what is it? When was the moment where you said, okay, this is definitely for me, this is absolutely what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to London, I'm going to try this out?
I got a tape, wasn't even a CD.
A cassette tape
of Miss Saigon. And I was basically Kim in my bedroom every night. Then I saw the show and realised I'm not going to play it. But anyway, but I was basically Kim. And I felt, because I loved singing along to pop songs and everything in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. My mum loved, oh, do that Wind Beneath My Wings, you could have that. she loved me singing that one. We go to karaoke. I just used to sing on my own at home and never really want to show anyone. But I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to live like drama through song. You know? I love the drama of it. And like just pretending to go through another life. Mm-hmm. And I never really had the balls to do it. And one day there was some sort of gig at our college. And I was like, I'm going to sing a song that I wrote. And so I did. And it went down quite well. And I kind of enjoyed, I'm a bit of a show pony. I enjoyed shocking people.
Yeah.
I enjoyed being the quiet girl and then getting up and nailing it. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's quite dangerous, I know, in a production, because I know directors don't often like that, but they have to trust you that you can do that. But me working as a director as well, I'm a bit like, oh, just let me know if you're a show pony, because if you're not, I'm worried. Because, you know, if you don't bring it in rehearsals,
but sometimes
you're
a
bit like, no, I need to gather all my tools before I show anyone. You know? But now, actually, you should try and fail first, really. But I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that little shock, yeah. And my mum just, basically my drama teacher at college pushed me really far. And I decided I was going to go to drama school, and that was that, because I wasn't good at anything else. And somebody had told me that I was all right at this. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, finally, you know, something other than just hanging out with my mates on the roof during lessons is something that I'm good at.
So you went to, you came down to London, you went to Mountview, which...
Well, first of all, I had to... Oh, no, no, yeah, I did. I said to my mum, I've got an audition for Mountview, so I've got to go to London. And she was like, okay. And I was like, we could probably see Miss Saigon while I'm there, because I'm singing a song for Miss Saigon for my audition, obviously. Because mm-hmm, it was just him, and that's the only show I knew. But like, Elphaba now, you know, yeah. Everyone's doing that. And this is, you know, before the days of social media and everything. So I didn't know what drama schools were out there. I didn't know anything about it. So I had to go into the library, which I had never stepped foot in the college. And I found this book on drama schools, and I just kind of went eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and picked through. One was Guildford, one was Mountview, and the other one, I can't remember what it was. I don't think it exists anymore, but really? They certainly took my money anyway, took my deposit, and I didn't end up going there. And yeah, went down to London and we stayed with one of my mum's friends. We had a lovely little trip there, and she was like, I've never seen you like this. I've never seen you so prepared for something.
That's nice.
And then when we came back, I had to audition for a grant back in the days where, you know, they gave a shit and they could fund you. So yeah, I went to audition for the council. It's weird. We went into this beautiful place in Preston, and we were in this kind of little room with a tape recorder in it, and I had brought my own pianist.
Wow.
Because I was like, no one else is playing this for me. Like, I've rehearsed this with Sam and this is what we're doing. And so I brought my own pianist. My mum had given me a lift there, and I had everything. I had my music. Like, I was prepared. I had like documents for Mountview. Like, I was ready.
You really wanted it by the sound of things.
Oh, I was going to get it, and that was it.
Yeah.
And when I set my heart on something, I'm like, I'm getting this. And so, yeah, my mum just couldn't believe it. She was like, I mean, you were just so... Anyway, I went into the room and said, oh, I've brought my own pianist, but there doesn't seem to be a piano. And they went, oh, hold on, there is a piano in the other room. We went into this like beautiful kind of ballroom, and they sat along these tables at the back, and he was like, this is the best piano I've ever played. Like, it was so beautiful. Went in there and I sang, I give my life for you, from the second, like, gave it the full works. I think I even started on my knees. Like, you know what I mean? I'd choreographed the whole thing. And yeah, and then this woman was crying. I was like, Mom, I made someone cry. don't know whether that was because I was out of tune or not. But yeah, she was just really chuffed. She said, I've never seen you like this, so...
That's amazing. That does sound like the first 10 minutes of a film about someone who then goes on to win seven Tony Awards. That's amazing. So you mentioned as well that you came down to Mountview, which I kind of want to skip past, because training is training. You know, what happens in drama school stays in drama school. I'm just interested because you must have graduated. I don't want to give away your age or anything, but you must have graduated kind of 16 years ago. 12, 10, 16, 9.
59.
Around that.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, it feels to me, as someone who knew of you before we met and kind of now knows you, it felt to me like you were part of a new wave, or you were kind of caught up in a new wave of stuff that was happening in the West End. Mm. And I'm going to call it like the American Invasion. It felt like Avenue Q, Spring Awakening, Wicked, Hairspray, all these shows were coming over. They were huge monster hits. We knew they were hits as well, because they've been massive on Broadway. And it felt to me like you were kind of riding part of that wave. And I'm just interested to know, as someone who stayed in the business since then, what that experience was like, first and foremost, and do you think that things have changed since then? What change
definitely,
have you noticed?
Definitely. Well, me, Paul Spicer, Neil Eckersley and David Randall started a company called Notes from New York. And Paul and Neil were very much the producers of that, and we were just creative input. But that was amazing to be a part of. And it was a series where we brought the songs over from New York because mm-hmm. nobody was doing new theatre here. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of caught on, and lots of other people started doing it as well. with some people, it got a bit competition-wise, and it's a bit like, no, you're missing the point. This isn't a competition. This is like, let's get together and do that. And I think with so much of this rise in female power as well, I think that's got something to do with the fact that we are starting to work together in theatre now and not not be in competition, which I think is silly, bringing other shows down. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
you know, giving rise to shows that don't need celebrities in them.
Yes, yeah. No, I mean, that's something that you've always just been... I mean, the reason I love you and have always loved you is because you're so vocal and you're really... You've got... But about things that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And you've got these morals and you've got these standards and you kind of don't really accept anything...
No.
Beneath them, and you're...
When I was younger, I was called mouthy because of it, because I think if I was a boy, it would have been different, and I don't mean to, but
I think
it really would have been. I think you're a bossy upstart when you're a girl and you have an opinion.
I think you're right.
When you're a boy and you have an opinion, like, he's going to go far.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think that's bang on. Yeah, I think you're totally right. But I just want to go back to the idea of... I don't know how many people might know, but of course I know about this kind of Notes from New York thing that you and Paul did. And I know that you did a production of The Last 5 Years at the Haymarket Theatre Royal. And you were really kind of instrumental in bringing these new works over and kind of saying, look, guys, there's this, it's not just about these huge juggernaut shows like Hairspray, like Avenue Q, but actually there's this new writing that happens off Broadway. And there's such an exciting, culture of that in America that we weren't really embracing.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's all changed. 10 years later, we are embracing new writing to a point where I think there's almost as much new writing as there is kind of revivals now. Maybe the new writing doesn't receive these huge productions, but there's a lot of new writing out there.
There is. And I wish that reviewers wouldn't review those shows like West End shows. Like I've read somewhere, you know, the lighting was this, and like, it's a budget of £20. Like, how can you judge it on that?
Yeah.
Like, judge the piece, you know.
The writing.
Basically. So please, that's kind of a little message to all reviewers. Just be careful when you're reviewing very small, low budget shows and just know that they don't have the money. But then when you do go and see something like, you know, Bat Out of Hell or something, you know, you are clapping money. Like, there's so much money in it. That's, I was just trying to think of the most expensive production I've seen recently. But you
I haven't
know,
seen it yet, but I've heard it's...
It's expensive, The design is amazing. It's actually the same designer as Grinning Man.
Oh, really?
It's an incredible design.
I can't wait to see it. Everyone who's seen it has said... Your mouth is on the floor at what you're looking at. You just kind of can't believe what you're looking at. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But in terms of, I mean, it's quite interesting you talk about these shows with smaller budgets, because as well as being passionate about new writing, you're equally passionate about Fringe. And for me, that's so encouraging when someone like you, who has done, you know, Mamma Mia, Fame, Avenue Q, Sister Act, you've done these big shows, but then you're equally as passionate about new writing, smaller venues, and companies that are starting off. I mean, I know I've benefited personally from that because we work together on an off West End production. What is it that, why do you have that passion? Why do you give it that time?
Because I like when like-minded, brilliant people work together on something, and theatre gets back to being what theatre is, not a big corporate money-making machine, but theatre. And unfortunately in the West End, because of the big corporate money making machines, it just becomes this factory, this business, this, you know, the money people that you know, the bean counters are making the creative decisions, and you just think, why are you, surely as a professional bean counter, you know, to get the professionals who know what they're doing in the job, but everybody thinks they can do theatre because of shows like X Factor. Everybody thinks they're Simon Cowell. Everybody thinks that, you know, they know how to judge somebody. They know how to judge something. They know what decisions to make. Oh, well, I want to see this, so this is what it is. It's like, well, of course, but theatre is collaborative, and it's with the creatives you have in the room, and leave it to the creatives, and you go and do your bean counting.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually, because I think a lot of people wouldn't think... about
that. And you're not allowed to say that because the bean counters pay your wages, you know? And as soon as you say something, you're an upstart, but it's like, you don't understand. I'm just trying to rescue your failing business.
So failing. In off West End theatre or fringe theatre or, you know, less commercial theatre, companies and creatives are able to make kind of more brave, risky choices, things that aren't necessarily dependent on making money. And so it can often be more artistic and inventive.
Yeah.
And you absolutely found yourself there kind of a few times.
Yeah.
For those very reasons.
Yeah. And I think, you know, unfortunately with any business, at the top of the business comes a place of privilege, and they normally come from a place of privilege. Mm. So, and art isn't that. Mm-hmm. Like, just look at areas of London. As soon as the poor artists move into an area, they make it absolutely amazing. And then suddenly the prices go up and the artists can't live there anymore. Mm-hmm. They're like, we created this. And then, and that's what happens everywhere. And that's what's happening with theatre, you know.
So, because right now I feel like we're part of a really exciting new little shift in London at the moment. It feels like good work is getting out there.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of nonsense as well. Those shows that I think will always be part of the landscape, part of the buffet that
absolutely
we're kind of,
yeah,
you know, provided with. But
yeah,
there's some really exciting things happening. You know, Grinning Man, of course. Everyone's talking about Jamie, The Ferryman, Girl from the North Country. These shows are moving into the West End from smaller venues, you know, from smaller runs. And they're successful.
Yeah.
They're having a good time
definitely
there.
Definitely.
And it's
all
so encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's definitely happening now. But what I was saying is it wasn't. And so that's why I think a lot of people like me moved.
Mm-hmm.
we'll just started championing new work because we want to selfishly, like, I'm not this charity do-gooder or anything like that, which people are like, isn't it great that you're now... It's like, well, no, I want to do that job because that's a good part.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
written
yeah
by an amazing person and I want to work with those people. Mm. I don't want to feel like a factory worker anymore. I want to feel like I will be listened to as well.
It's interesting you say that about, you know, I want to play that part and I want to work with those people, because I think and I hope that's kind of one of the reasons why we ended up doing I Love You, A Perfect Now Change together, which was in the studio space above the Arts Theatre. We did it about three years ago.
It's such good fun. I'd love to do that again. I know we all would. Like, every time we get together, we're like, oh, why
it's
didn't
funny,
we do that?
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that.
And it sold out.
It was such a small job for us all. I think we rehearsed for 2.5 weeks and we played for 3 weeks. But it's stayed with me. And, and you know, when I speak to you, when I speak to Sam Holmes, Simon Lipkin and Gina Beck, you know, all of whom are in the cast, everyone says the same thing. There's just such fond memories of that production.
It's such a fun process.
It was a really, really nice time. I think we probably will do it again. Give it a couple of years.
We have to.
Because for those people who don't know, we
so
did
special
a year later after the original run, we did get back together, which had its own complications, but it ended up being really lovely. But we did a couple more performances a year later. And then there's got to be another opportunity somewhere down the line for us to get back together. I hope so.
Yeah, there just has to be, because it was too much fun.
Was a lot of fun, and it remains to this day my favourite job by far. But you talked a little bit about that idea of I want to do that show because I want to play that part, and I might not play that part in the bigger version of the show, or the bigger version of the show isn't happening right now, so this is my opportunity to be in that show
absolutely
and play that part. There's a lot of people are quite opinionated about fringe theatre and quite opinionated about off West End. And obviously there's a big argument and there's a big kind of conversation about no pay, low pay, which is actors, you know, not earning proper wages or livable wages from fringe theatre. What are your thoughts on the place of fringe theatre? You know, does it belong in the kind of eco-structure of this business, of this industry?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important. For one, it's like a dress rehearsal for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how it should be. Is writers trying out material, actors trying out different parts. Like, I would never have even been seen for Thérèse Raquin if that was in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, I'm a comedy actress. You can't possibly do both.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I can. I'm a woman. I can multitask.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wouldn't have been seen for it at all. Mm. And it was so nice.
Yeah. Which you did that at the park?
Yes. So and was it at the Finborough and then the park?
Right. And was it just a play or was it was a musical as well?
It was a musical,
well? Right.
Yeah. But it was dark, mm-hmm. really, really dark. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, one of the guy's agents, I met them afterwards and she was like, oh, because I came out and I gave her a smile. I said hello. She went, oh, it's wonderful to see you smile. And I thought, wow. That, I was like, yeah. It's actually quite
pretty
refreshing.
Pretty dark couple of hours.
Not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really dark.
But I agree, you know, I think that so many creatives, writers and actors cut their teeth on
Absolutely,
the fringe. And it's
yeah.
such an important part.
You do
part.
It at drama schools and you do it in the fringe. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's
because it's replaced
step.
Rep. You know, of course, yeah. actors used to go to a regional theatre, you know, like the Liverpool Everyman or the Royal Exchange in Manchester. And they'd be part of the company there for a couple of seasons and they play several roles within that time and they'd learn the craft on the job.
Yeah.
But of course that doesn't exist anymore. And so Fringe, I think, in some ways has replaced that and it's become yeah. as necessary. It's just interesting. It seems to me a lot of people who don't need the Fringe are quite vocal about it not being there or they don't see the point in it.
Right.
But to me, I find that quite interesting that it's the people who don't need it that are trying to get yeah. rid of it. Whereas the people who are there and they're part of it and they depend on it.
Yeah. How many shows have transferred from the Fringe? I mean, not many, but...
Well, but it has but happened.
It has happened.
I mean, look at Titanic.
Happen.
You know, Titanic started at Southwark Playhouse. And, you know, it's done 2 runs since then and it's about to go on a UK tour.
Yeah.
That's a success story, whether we like it or not. Yeah. And that started life in a 220-seater venue, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's vital. And, you know, similarly with creatives, you know, you look at some amazing people who've started on the fringe. I know Andrew Wright, Drew McConey, both of whom are fantastic choreographers, worked a lot on the fringe in their early days. Drew did a show with me, you know, and now they're off taking over the world. Drew's about to direct
Absolutely.
On Broadway, for goodness
Absolutely.
Sake.
It's so important.
You know, so, yeah, well, I'm glad to hear you say that because
yeah,
I'm...
It's like, it does feel like... Because you're always learning as well. You're never just suddenly an expert just because mm-hmm. you've done the show. So, you know, you get to vary your... what's the word?
Craft.
Basically. Yeah, kind of that.
And so we're kind of coming to the end now, but I just... wonder, you know, you have been working professionally for 15 years and or probably over, I don't know the exact date, Julie, all right. But what keeps you interested? I mean, does it become a job eventually or, you know, are you still interested in finding new things, exploring new ideas, playing new parts?
It gets boring when you are, this sounds horrible, doesn't it? But it does get boring when you're in a long-running show
mm-hmm.
and you're doing the same thing every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Mm. It's no matter how excellent the
production
art
is
or the production or, you know, and the people around you. And it is fun and it's great to have a regular wage for that long, but sometimes when you are in, you know, you have to stand on 6 and do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
that does get creatively...
Mm-hmm.
implosive sometimes.
Yeah, that's kind of what I recognise
like
about you, which is different from perhaps some other actors I know, which is you are really all about the creativity and the artistic side of it. It just drives you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that was something I noticed when we worked together. You didn't just want to do the first thing that came into your head. You wanted to scurry around and find things and keep developing. And I think right through to the end of the run, you were still coming up with things, you know. And so it doesn't surprise me then that you've shown a little bit of interest in directing recently.
Yeah.
And how much of that do you think, I mean, are you happy to just do it as a sideline? Do you think you'll have a career change or don't you know or don't you care?
I don't really ever want to define myself as either.
Don't pigeonhole me.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm both.
Mm-hmm. Me
I'd
too, although
to
I don't
it.
Act anymore.
Yeah, but I'd love to keep, keep up both. And I think they do go hand in hand. Some people don't like it because they're just one or the other and they don't want you to be.
You know, it makes people feel comfortable when they can
pigeonhole you. Yeah.
And you in a box.
I am definitely both. And I think it's quite important, especially if you're working with actors, to have known what it feels like.
Yeah, I think it's benefited me as a director to have acted because I know what I'm asking an actor to do, and I know that actually what you're saying, Kirk, that's quite exposing. So maybe term it in a different way, or find a different, you know, or actually that's just standard. They should be able to do that, with, you know. So me having performed has definitely influenced my style of direction, I think, and I think it probably,
and I could tell that as well.
Probably does with you as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And now from acting to directing to doing a podcast series. You've seen it all. But thank you for coming on this series. It's really nice to talk to you. And where can people find you if they want to kind of follow you? Do you have a Twitter account?
In the bar.
Do you do social media?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, I'm just not brilliant at it.
But they can find you on Twitter, can they?
Yeah, if I've just... something ridiculous happens to me, normally I'll put that on there, but again, I'm not great.
You're not big on it.
I'm just not great at the whole doing it to market myself.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then if it's something funny, I normally just tell friends.
Yeah, like, you don't feel the need to share it with the world.
But I'm trying. I'm trying. So yes, I'm on Instagram. I am on Instagram. I'm terrible at taking photos. I'm always in the moment rather than outside of the moment taking photos.
Yeah, well, I'm the same, actually. And you've got a few albums out as well.
Yeah!
Where can people find them on... look at you cringing, hating every moment. Where can people find them on iTunes?
Well,
or?
I have a wonderful new website being designed at the moment.
Okay.
So as soon as that's out, everything will be very easy and in one place. But at the moment, I've still got an old website with ones being...
But hopefully by the time this goes out, if people search Julie Atherton, then they can find you and go and buy your...
Yeah, julieatherton.com, and everything will be on there at some point.
I'm excited to see it. Thank you so much for speaking to me today.
It's all right.
Lots of love.
Don't do it again.
Bye.
Bye.